All right, everybody, welcome back. My name's Simon Ward, and I'm your host for this High Performance Human podcast, a weekly show where it's my goal to share information which will educate and enable you to achieve your potential, both as a human and an athlete, and also help you to create the foundation to be the best version of yourself. And right now, during the COVID-19 pandemic, we are all trying to navigate our way through some extremely challenging times. And for the next few weeks at least, I want to share some insight into how others are adapting to the situation and try to provide you with some ideas and resources that might be of help. Personally, I feel this is a time when we as coaches can step up, help the community with leadership and guidance, and also provide a little bit of optimism. And right now, I realise that many of you see what we're doing in the SWOT community in terms of supporting our athletes, and you might want to be part of that too. And after all, it's great to be part of a virtual community at the moment, particularly when we're restricted in our movements and perhaps even confined to our own homes. And if you do want to join us, please scroll down through the show notes, click on the link at the bottom, and we'll be only too happy to have you join the group. At the same time, I'm also aware that many people are struggling financially. And whilst we'd love to have you as part of our community, we don't want you to feel excluded if you're uncertain about finances or the future. We don't want you to feel like this is something that you can't join. So, if you're interested in joining our group, because as I've said, and I'd like to reinforce it, being part of a virtual community now can be a great help, then please just reach out to us via email. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your situation and why you want to join, and we'll try and find a way in which we can help you out wherever we can. Okay, enough preamble. Let's get rolling and crack on with today's guests. Welcome back, listeners. And we have another gathering of the grumpy old coaches. So firstly, welcome, chaps. Steve?
Hi, good to be back. Good evening.
And Mark, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Now, I think that the last time we got together was at the beginning of lockdown. So what have you been doing differently since then?
Gardening. Oh, I nipped up to a Durham.
Stop now. Stop now.
It's a dumb thing.
There's a new golf shot, isn't there, apparently? It's a long drive that goes out of bounds, but there's no penalty. It's called the Dominic Cummings. Anyway, we try to keep these politics free, so let's move on from that. Mark, what you've been doing daycare today, haven't you? I think, is that because your wife's back at work?
Doing daycare, whether she's back at work or not, to be honest, Simon. Do daycare every day. And it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to do daycare with my children. My friends need to keep reminding me that it's not babysitting. And I'm babysitting today, and they say, no, it's not babysitting if they're your own children. You can't call it babysitting. But yeah, looking after the kids, and thankful that there's been some good weather. But yes, all in all,
there is that. Myself.
Just on that then, because neither Steve or I have children, Mark. So if it's your own kids and you can't call it babysitting, what do you call it?
Called parenting.
Parenting, yeah, I knew the answer to that.
Parenting, yeah, you see.
Called parenting. It's not childminding or babysitting, as I keep getting corrected.
So clearly you haven't been reading the pages then.
No. Don't even get paid for it.
All right, well, we've had a couple of good subjects already, and Mark, you suggested at the end of the last one that we should talk about aging. It's something that's happening to us, and it's something that's going to happen to every single listener, some sooner than others. But you know, there's no point in hiding from it. And to be quite honest, I've always thought that the alternative is much worse. So I'm quite happy with aging. Let's go through everybody's ages first. So I'm 56 currently. Steve, how old are you right now?
55.
And Mark?
I am the baby of the group at 47.
Okay, so you've got a few things to learn from us, I think. But yeah, I was listening to another podcast the other day, and the gentleman on there was talking about that he felt that there was three ages. So there's the chronological age. That's basically the number of days, years you've been on this earth. So we can't change that, and the clock's ticking all the time. Then you've got your physical age. So that's that's the physical condition you're in. And I'd like to think myself that I'm at least as fit as I was when I was in my mid-30s. What about you guys? Do you think you're as fit as you were when you were in your mid-30s? Or if you were comparing yourself to the average members of the population and you took some of those tests where they rank your fitness, where do you think you'd fit then? You know, how old do they think they'd assess you to be?
Oh, go on, Mark.
Thanks. Steve's just given up.
I'm going to have a think about this one.
The thing is, as we get older, we all like to think that we get a score which says you are as fit as a 25-year-old. I don't know where I'd stand on one of those tests, but certainly, I mean, I've been obviously racing since I was 17 years of age. So unfortunately, I've noticed considerable drop-offs in certain aspects of my fitness, not all of them, but in certain areas of my fitness, I've noticed a considerable drop-off since my early 30s, compared back.
Well, if you if you were doing a race that you'd done, you know, 30 years ago, what sort of drop off in fitness? Let's say you were doing a 10K, how much slower would you be now than you were when you were 17?
You pick the worst one, 10K, to be honest, because my running has dropped off significantly more than swimming and biking. And I do think physiologically, physically, you can maintain swimming and biking for various reasons. More than you can with running, that's the one that drops off. But it would depend on the race as well. I mean, that's an interesting fact. So in a longer race like an Ironman, I'm actually not that far off where I was in my 30s. I raced like a moron in my 30s with the Ironman, so I probably could have done better looking back. But in a sprint race or a short race, I'd be much, much further off where I was. So, you know, I got down to 31 something for 10K, and I don't think I'd probably just about get under 40 minutes now. Mm. So I'm a long way off. But yeah, but interesting. Swimming and biking are very similar.
What about you, Steve?
In terms of the comparing to the general population, I think it's fair to say that anybody who trains and races anything like what we do is going to be fitter than the average 20, 30-year-old. Mm. You know, the average 20, 30-year-old isn't very fit. So I think, you know... Compared to the average, then I'd be pretty confident we're all still ahead. Mm. I completely agree with what Mark says, is that it's definitely the run that has where performance has tailed off. Swim and bike, you know, certainly at long distance, I would say on the bike, I'm probably close to as good as I have been. Which might mean I wasn't very good.
Yeah. You weren't that good before, were you?
The drop off on the bike is a long distance anyway. You know, shorter distances it is more, but long distances is 2-4% maybe. Mm. Swim similar. I mean, I'm pretty sure with the swim. I've never done massive volumes of swimming. I could if I did as much as I'd swimming as I did, you know, at my peak in terms of volume, I'd be pretty close again, 2-5%. But the big one is the run. You know, we can talk about why, but I'd be pretty confident that's the same for everybody or the majority of people.
Yeah, I'd say exactly what you two have. My swimming is probably just as good now. I mean, that's my favourite thing. You know, this period we've had recently has been the longest I've ever been out. Even when I broke my collarbone, I was able to get back in the water after 5 weeks and do kicking and one-arm swimming. So my swimming hasn't really deteriorated much since I started doing triathlon 30 years ago. I'd say in terms of bike sessions, I'm still, my FTP might have dropped off a bit because I've not really tested it. But in terms of some of the powers I can reach on some of the sessions, I'd say they were on some of the... you know, workouts I do, I'd say they were reasonably comparable. So yeah, definitely running's always been my weakest anyway. It wouldn't take much for me actually to be better than I was when I was 30 running wise. but yeah, so that's good. What else have you noticed about your training then as you've got older, Mark?
My trainers have got older. Well, I think big thing for me is recovery rate as well. And I think anybody who's getting older will always say, that the recovery is a lot worse. And I also think we you know, we've kind of mentioned like the psychology of getting older as well. And I do think you've got to be careful just saying those very stereotypical things that, yeah, my recovery is worse because I'm older. Because when I really look back to when I was younger, if I did some hard sessions, I remember waking up the morning after and not being able to walk. So, but yeah, I do think my recovery slowed down. And I just think now I've got older, I have to be much more specific with my training. So look at what have I lost as I got older and really try to target those things. Whereas when I was younger, I would just do a bit of everything, you know, speed work, endurance. So just mix everything together. Whereas now I think as I got older, what I've realized is I have very specific strengths and very specific weaknesses. And I don't think that I had that when I was younger. I think it was just more generalized, more balanced.
So what are the weaknesses then that you've identified now that are more pronounced?
The very stereotypical things you talk about as getting older, lack of strength, the mobility, that just top end. My endurance as I've got older, I think if it's either improved or it's stayed the same. So in longer distance events, I'll always be better than in shorter distance events. But what I've lost is that maximal force production, that VO2 max, whatever you want to call it, all of that top end stuff, the speed on the run, and yeah, mobility. I don't know what age I got to before I start making noises every time I sit down and get up. When did that happen?
Yeah.
What sort of noises are you making?
Well, I just get up to switch the tip, you know, remote, and it's a...
Oh, you're not saying that.
Sometimes there's a little swear word in like, oh yeah, bugger. You know, as you get up. But even stand up and sit down and make a noise every time now.
I'm pretty sure I got to at least 50 before that happened.
Yeah, so you're not passing wind or anything like that as you get up. That's what I'm saying.
But yeah, all of those real, everything you would class as top end, you know, the strength, the VO2, all that kind of stuff, power output, speed. Those are the things that I'm really struggling with now. That I notice the difference as I've got older. Endurance less so, and I think I can still match those kind of things.
What about you, Steve? What have you noticed? Exactly.
Pretty much the same, to be honest. I think all the science tells us that everybody will lose VO2, you know, maximal capability, and we'll lose muscle mass and therefore muscle strength as they age. You know, from when is individual. I think that, you know, that is accepted. The general advice to endurance athletes is, as you get older, to at least maintain, if not increase the amount of strength work and high intensity work that you do to try and compensate, which, you know, certainly I try to do, as Mark said, you know, try and be very specific about it. The issue for me is that I just can't do that on the run. You know, anything high intensity and it's a recipe for another break, you know, a breakdown or a week of recovery or something. So have to try and sort of compensate for that. Find ways around it. But yeah, certainly, I mean, I never had that top end anyway. Really, compared to long distance, or, you know, even at, in my 20s, I was much better at the longer stuff. I think, you know, whether because I came into, I mean, Mark started as a teenager, I was late, I was early 20s before he even started any endurance sport, which, you know, is probably in terms of actually reaching potential is definitely a limiter. But in terms of longevity, it probably helps, you know, in terms of maintaining or reducing the risk of injury, if you like. You know, there's I've got no evidence for that. That's just a sort of a individual observation. But I think, you know, if you're training seriously as endurance athletes for your teens, you need to do that to reach your absolute potential. But there are advantages to coming at it later in terms of lasting in the sport.
Yeah, I wonder if that lasting in the sport is just enthusiasm because you haven't been at it for so long. So it's a psychological thing, you know. If you've been doing stuff for 30 or 40 years, there's just a sort of resignation. I don't need to go out in the rain to ride today. I've one of my friends, he's must be coming up to 74 now. He didn't start in triathlon until he was in his early 50s, I think. He's still been at it 20 years. And he was a smoker. He was in advertising, highly paid advertising executive in New York. Now, when you see him, he's 6'3", he's tanned, he's lean, super lean. He's won his age group in Kona at 72. You know, and that whole thing about if only I could keep going until I was 70, 75, I'd be the last one standing. Well, do you know what? When I was racing in Kona, he overtook me on the run. So I can't even beat the guy that comes in first in that age category at the age of 50. So, you know, I'm going to have to keep going until I'm 80 or 90 now. Because he started later, he's actually still improving, you know, and it's great to see. It's great to see the enthusiasm of a guy that's 74. He rings me up and he says, right, Simon, so I'm thinking that I need more strength training next year. You know, he's an engineer as well now. He's trained himself to make all this stuff with carbon fiber. So he said, what do you think about this new contraption, this new aero contraption I've made from a bike? He's got the enthusiasm of a sort of a teenager. It's amazing. I love it. And to be honest, you know, in terms of my inspiration and my aspirations, I'd hope that when I'm in my 70s, I can still be as enthusiastic and active as he is, really. I'm not even bothered about my performance. I just want to still have the enthusiasm and energy to do what he does.
I think age group in triathlon as well kind of gives people that. You know, I don't know any other sport where people wish 2 years of their life away. And what I mean by that is at 48 and going, 60. When I get to 50, I'm in a new category. And, it's my first year in the new category and I could get on the podium or I could get in the top 10. And they're wishing away 2 years to get older. So they're looking forward to getting older in a different category, aren't they? So, you know, I don't know any other sport where you get that level of, you know, age group kind of motivation.
No, I think it's fairly unique in that. I mean, obviously there's age categories in other sports, but I think it's a much bigger thing in triathlon.
Well, a lot of the females that I've known that are approaching 30 or 40 or 50 hate that. Just it's one more day, but they hate the turning of the numbers. Apart from the female triathletes who are embracing it. Come on, it's my birthday tomorrow, going up an age group. Very good. So, the other thing I noticed with training, you know, when you were in your teens, in your early 20s, you wanted to, particularly again, going out for a run, you could just lace up your shoes and set off, couldn't you? And you could set off at a rate of knots, like a dog running after a ball. Oh, now I have to spend longer warming up and getting my body ready than I can actually spend running. You know,
absolutely. Well, that's true in everything. You know, swim, bike, and run. I mean, I think we've spoken about this before, but nobody warms up well enough anyway, or 99% of people don't warm up well enough anyway, but it becomes more important and takes longer as you get older, I think. You know, I reckon 5K running before
you stop.
Before I start to feel. there are days like that. Before I start to feel or I'm likely to get into it.
Yeah.
Mark, you were always a runner, weren't you, at the beginning? You sort of came to triathlon from running, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I started triathlon at 17. And I started running at 17. So I kind of started them both consecutively.
Okay.
But I was always a better runner, you know. That was always... And a couple of years where I probably focused more on running and less on triathlon, and a few years doing adventure racing, all bits and bobs. So I was kind of doing them all together. But yeah, running was always my thing. And it's funny now that running was always my thing. That was my strength. That was where I make up my time, and now it's my worst discipline. You know, so it's completely role reversal now.
But is it your worst discipline compared to other people in your age group still? I mean, you'd still probably, because you're still running, you'd still probably fare quite well against other people in that specific age group, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, looking at the top guys in the age group, there's a few guys that are running quicker than I am. But I think I'm pretty even now. Swim, bike, and run. I seem to be pretty even. If you ranked where I was in my age group against other people. I'm pretty level right across the board. But interesting, you know, my Ironman marathon times haven't actually changed. I think when I was younger, you talk about as you get older, you get experience. So the last Ironman, I didn't race last year because I ruptured my hamstring. And the year before, I did Ironman UK. And I think it was that I ran a 3:18 or something at Ironman UK. It was last two or three years ago. And I ran a 3:18 on that course. And if I was fresh, I think that year, I probably just could have ducked under 3 hours for a marathon. And I ran 3:18 in an Ironman. And I look back to when I was a really fit runner. I only ran one proper marathon many years ago, and I ran a 2:36 marathon at Chicago. And I think the year after raced Ironman Austria and ran a 3:20. And that's, so when I was in 2:36 shape, when I was younger, I was running 3:20 in an Ironman. And now I'm probably struggling to get under 3 hours for a marathon, but ran a 3:18.
Yeah, and so arguably the Austria course is a lot more conducive to faster running than the Ironman UK one.
Yeah. So yeah. I look back now and just think, how did I not run 3 hours or quicker in an Ironman when I was in my 30s? But I think I'm a lot more clued up now. You know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I would just nail the bike and you'd smash it and you wouldn't be thinking about nutrition. And I think my experience has come on a lot more since then. So I'm just better pacing strategy, better feeding strategies and all of those kind of things. So I can squeeze out a lot more and get a lot closer to my fresh marathon time, if you like. Whereas I just ran myself into the ground many years ago. So, you know, just very bad pacing. I think what we said earlier, how many people, you know, they get to the 40s, 50s and just wish, oh, if I could go back 20, 30 years, I'd do this different and that different. So, the run times are not dropping off. In the shorter races, I'm way off, but in the longer races, they're not a million miles off. But I'm probably steady across all three now.
Have your training volumes changed then, either of you, in the last few years as you're getting older?
I think I probably do more. Yeah. I think I don't train anywhere near as hard as I used to when I used to run with, you know, when I was running properly, I was doing really hard track workouts and stuff like that. I couldn't run on the track now. Achilles and calf would probably be knackered within a week. So I used to do a lot more intense sessions and a lot harder. And I would say that's one of the things, you know, we talked about how everything decreases with age, VO2 and speed and power and stuff. But I do think it's important as well not to use those as excuses, because once you see that the research says this, you know, your VO2 is going to drop, your strength's going to drop, your power's going to drop, your speed's going to drop. It's very easy to fall into that mindset of, well, I'm just getting older now, and that's that. So because I'm getting older, I'm going to get slower. And you can become a little bit defeatist. So I'm very conscious of not accepting that I'm going to get slower and thinking, no, you know, you just need to do the right kind of training. And with my swimming and biking, I'm probably the same level where I was 15, 20 years ago. My running has dropped way off, and I keep using the excuse, it's because I've got older. And when I look back at my running when I was younger, I was doing so much more than I am now. But the problem comes back to, as Steve has already said, if I tried to do that, I'd probably end up breaking down. Or am I making an excuse?
Right. What about you, Steve? How's your chain changed?
I haven't really run like what I would call properly for probably a decade. I've had sort of Achilles problems for longer than that. So I really haven't strung together a decent amount of running for a long time. In fact, it was Kona 10 years ago. Sorry, that was the last decent Ironman run I had. Biking and very similar. I mean, the biking certainly, you know, in terms of amount I can do, probably very similar. Probably same with the swimming, but I find it hard just to get to the pool, to be honest. That's a motivation thing, not a physical thing. I swam. I did a decent block of swimming. I did Ironman Italy 2-3 years ago. And I did a decent amount of swimming before that, and swam pretty well off that. The main thing is running, and that's been down just to basically constant niggles. I've got what they call Haglund's deformity. So it's not actually an Achilles problem, but it just causes sort of aggravation on the Achilles.
Is that like a bone? Is that a bone spur on your heel?
It's a bone spur at the back of the heel rather than under it. Most bone spurs are under your heel, and this is at the back of it. I'm told it's from wearing high heels all the time. So I've tried to cut that down. the last few years have actually sort of just been finding a way to cope with it, really. As I said, I think before we started recording, it's a case of, as Mark just alluded to, it's anything remotely high intensity or remotely plyometric that causes sort of aggravation. So I've basically given up on that. And recently it's going okay, actually. I've found that, again, this would be a decent tip, I think, for everybody, is that there's a case for actually making each run longer, but less regular running. I found that's worked quite well. So I don't think, I can't get in quite the amount, just the time that I used to. I've never been a big mileage. I think, 60, 70 miles a week, I've done once or something.
That's about what I do on the bike.
Well, that was probably 20 years ago. I've found that it helps, because I need the recovery. Most runs, I feel, I do feel the Achilles at some point. If I try and run consecutive days, it's not going to happen. So I try to run each slightly longer than I, would have done before, just so I can get some mileage in, and get the recovery.
What about your so we've ascertained that your probably intensity is not the same as it was running wise, but for both of you, what about the intensity distribution for swimming and cycling then? Are you still doing the same sort of amount of interval work there?
For me, I would say with my running, I am still maintaining intensity, but I just do it different ways. So treadmill's easy for me, because of the cushioned board. I can do really hard intervals on the treadmill, which would probably smash me on the road or the track. So I think you've just got to look at ways of getting the really hard workouts. If you want to work on that kind of VO2 max intensity, but you don't want your legs to be smashed and your Achilles to be sore the next day, then treadmill or something is a good one for me, or hill reps or grass or whatever it is. But on the bike and the swim, so when I was younger, I didn't do a lot of swimming. It wasn't my favourite sport, really. And I would probably go to the pool 2, maybe 3 times a week. But I thought like 2, 2.5K was a proper session. So I swim a lot more now. So like at the moment, I swim 4 times a week, 4,500 meters each time. So I at the moment I'm swimming 18K a week on 4 swims. So I do a lot more volume now. My swimming's a lot stronger than it was. On the bike, I think I do more volume and more intensity. I'm going to say I was a bit lazy when I was younger. And I think, without knocking the youngsters, I don't mean I'm knocking myself here, not anybody else. I think when I was young, because I was, sounds arrogant to say you're a bit gifted, but I was, I was pretty sporty. I was good at endurance sports. So you kind of get a bit lazy and lapsadaisical with it. You get away with the minimum. Because if you're doing okay in events, you think you're quite fit and strong, then there wasn't that driver to go and do a lot of training. Whereas now, as I'm losing that, I'm looking at other ways to get fit. So as I've got older, I've gradually trained harder and trained more. And that's why going back to, if I did this when I was 20 years ago, where would I have finished?
I've, like you, Steve, I've had a lot of Achilles problems. I've spoken quite a lot about the work I've done with the physios up here, and I've had quite a good spell when I've been running, and but I did start introducing a lot of running drills. This is part of that preparation we were talking about. Before every run now, I spend at least 5 or 10 minutes doing some running drills that Alison Rose has given me. I've mixed those in with some of the ladders that I used to use with the cricketers and rugby players. So I do all these fast beat drills to get my heart rate up. I started some skipping. I started doing some low-grade plyometrics, some hopping and some jumping, along with the skipping. I was able to introduce some faster work on the grass. There's some the Bradford City train not far from me, and so you can run on the pitch there. So it's well maintained, it's flat. You know, the grass is always nice and short to run on. And I was doing some of the Bilat intervals, you know, 30-30s. And I found those quite good. I've also started doing some hill reps. I've developed an Achilles problem the last few weeks, and it's probably due down to just lack of mobility because I've not been able to see the physio. But we have got a set of steps up in the woods. There's 200 of them, and it takes 2 minutes to get up. And even if you walk up them fast, I can guarantee your heart rate's going to be above 90%. So you can still get the VO2 max stimulation. I'm not running fast, but I can get the intensity, and then it's like a triangle, so I can walk down the two sides or jog downhill and do four or five laps of that. And I'm telling you what, that's a proper workout.
I have found actually that's on the run, that's, I was going to say the only, but all the best way to get some intensity for me is actually hills as well. Yeah. So all the running I do is very hilly. But like you say, if you can find some steps, or a very steep hill off road, whatever, that will get your heart rate up whilst actually moving relatively slowly, which I found is what I need. It's the actual speed of movement that causes issues rather than intensity.
What about then? You both coaching still? So am I. So what besides what we've chatted about there? What have you noticed in the approaches or the training behaviours or the prescription that are with people that you work with?
For me, I think there's two sides to this, and I keep referring to the psychology. And I do feel the psychology is really, really important. In that there is a physical side of it. So the physical side is with age, you lose VO2, you lose strength and power and all this kind of stuff. So I personally, and for people that I coach, if they fit that bill, because I would say not all older people as well fit that bill. So you will have coached someone who is 45, 50 years of age, used to play rugby, turns up, and you know they can knock out 1,200 watts on a sprint on a watt bike, and they are strong as hell in the 40s and 50s, but they've no aerobic endurance at all. So not everybody fits that bill of, as you get older, you lose strength and you lose power, so you should focus on that. Because there's plenty of people who are in the 40s and 50s and maybe even older who need to actually focus on endurance.
Well, hold on. I'd say, though, that in counter to that, I'd say they're probably still losing power and endurance power over what they used to have.
Absolutely.
They've still got a fair amount of it.
Absolutely. But what I'm referring to is how much power do you need for this specific sport?
Right, okay.
And compared to what else you need for that sport. So if someone comes and says, I want to do an Ironman, they may not be as strong as they were when they were in their 20s or 30s, but their strength may still massively outweigh their endurance.
What they need. Yeah.
For what they need to do the Ironman. So, you know, there are people who fit into that category. But I think the people that have been doing triathlon, the longer they've been doing it, they're the ones that tend to fall more into that category of they're losing the strength, losing the power. Now, whether that's because they're becoming specific to the activities they're doing. So as you do endurance stuff, you're fast twitch A's become slow twitch or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But I do think that category of people who need more power and more strength are the ones who've potentially been doing endurance sports for quite a long time. And then there's the psychology side of it as well. And I just think there's so many things with the psychology, like what I said earlier with people just presuming they're going to get slower. And the different mindset, you know, you just said you do those hill reps for your VO2 max, and there's a set of hill reps, and you can do those really hard with minimal impact on your joints and Achilles, but you can really get your heart and lungs. I don't know if it's just me, but again, I notice as people get older, almost they shy away from doing that hard stuff. Mm. And there's a switch in mindset. And the best example I can give you is when I was younger and I was a fairly good fell runner, I could, you know, low grade races, I might win low grade races. I can remember setting off in road races on the bike or fell races running and stuff like that. And you get to a hill. And when I was in my 20s and early 30s, my thought process was, I am going to put the boot in on this hill and I'm going to drop as many people as possible. I'm going to split it apart and see if I can shake people off on this climb. And that was always my attitude. And then as when I got into my 40s, it switched completely. So now in a race, when I see a hill, the first thing I think is, oh, take this steady from the start.
So is that just not called being smarter?
But no, but you know, in a tactical race, you just put the boot in and drop people in attack. But now just like see a hill and go, whoa, come on, just slow down, sunshine, pace it from the start. Now, whether you say it's been smarter or not, but just that complete different shift in perception from when I was younger, you know, your attitude towards things. And I think, you know, this is one of the problems is people shy away from the high intensity stuff, not just the fact that they need it. I think they avoid it. There's a psychological thing there. And that you've got to crack that. I don't think a lot of older people really want to do the higher intensity stuff. And when they do it, they probably don't do it hard enough.
But so I also think though there's a fear that high intensity will lead to injury, which if you warm up properly and you're well conditioned and do the appropriate stuff, it won't. And that perhaps it might lead to a heart attack. And they're more likely to have that when they get older than they are when they're younger. And again, you know, the science will show us that that's not really true, for most people. Hmm. And also the science will show, you know, that actually not doing that is probably more detrimental to your performance than doing it.
I have found the same as Mark, to be honest, that it becomes mentally tougher to do the high intensity stuff. What I found is useful is, you know, not on the run for reasons we've discussed, but on the bike, just getting out with a group basically forces me to work harder because the you know, competitive juices start flowing. And you don't want to get dropped, do you? So if you know, if the timing is right and you need a hard workout, then group training really, you know, same in the swim, Simon, if you're in lane, you know, in your master's lane, I'm sure it's the same. If you really want to push yourself, you know, train with others.
Swim with better swimmers.
I pride myself now on being one of the oldest in that lane. I can't quite get in the fast lane. And there is a guy called Nick Parks who you might remember him, Steve. He's always been a swimmer. He looks more like a swimmer. He's got that sort of physique of a swimmer. But he was on one of those very first British triathlon groups that gathered at Stoke Mandeville with Steve True. Seen the photograph, so I know he was there. But he competes open water stuff now, and he is in the faster lane than me, and he's the oldest one in there. He's mid to late 50s. But that's one of the things that keeps me going is the fact that, you know, I'm the oldest one of the oldest in that group, you know, in the faster lanes by a long way, and I'm sort of fighting to keep up there.
I think training with those faster people and quite often as they are younger people, for me is key, you know, because if you don't train with people who are better than you and faster than you all the time, I think you've got to be careful if you want to become like a bit of a bigger fish in a smaller pond and settling in your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And that's key. And I mean, going back, I know I'm banging on about the psychology side of it, but how my mindset has changed. And I do think it's responsible for a lot of my physical performances and the training that I do. When I came into my 40s, and I see a lot of people making this error, as I came into my 40s, I started saying to myself, you're better at longer stuff. You know, you're better at the longer stuff. So I'd start focusing on Ironman racing and shying away from short stuff. And after a year or two, it dawned on me, oh no, you're crap at short stuff. That's what you mean. You know, but I put a positive spin on it. I'm rubbish at the short stuff and I'm losing it. So I'll spin it around and say, I'm better at long stuff. Yeah, I'm better at Ironman. And as we know as coaches, if you want to improve, you work on your weaknesses. And all I was doing was just swerving them by convincing myself that as I get older, I'm better at longer events. And I think in running with ultras and with triathlon, with Ironman, I think a lot of people fall into that trap. They will shy away from sprint races or standard distance racing because it's just too painful. And the training to get better at sprint races and standard distance races, it's just too painful. So they'll say, I'm better at Ironman. And they can justify riding to the coffee shop all they like, you know. And of course, when you say I'm better at Ironman and therefore I should do more longer stuff, it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy then, because you dodge all the short, fast stuff, go and do more longer stuff, become even worse at short stuff and convince yourself you're better at longer stuff, and it just becomes a downward spiral.
Yeah, I think there's a balance to be made there. If I mean, that's perfectly true. and you know, training. If you're taking it seriously at long distance, then racing at shorter distance will do you good in the longer distance. But there's a motivation sort of question, isn't there? If it's keeping somebody in the sport, you know, that might otherwise find something else or stop, because they can move up a distance, because they don't, you know, maybe they've just had enough of pushing themselves, or they constantly get injured, you know, or they just don't enjoy it. Then, okay, moving up to the longer stuff where they can have a long leisurely ride more often, stop for a coffee, whatever. That's not necessarily a problem. It's a good thing if it's helping to keep them active, keep them in the sport, gives us some goals. That said, if you want to be as good as you can be as you age, then you do need to do the shorter stuff.
Just
wrapping up this bit on the type of training, because I'd like to just go on to that psychology thing a little bit more, Mark. Joe Friel's written that great book, Faster 50 or whatever. In there, he has a section from Ned Overend, who dabbled in Xterra, was a world-class mountain biker. He says there, I can still do all of the sessions that I used to do and all the workouts that I used to do. It's just I need a longer period of time to do them. So what I used to fit into 7 days might take me 14 days to do now, because I need more recovery.
Yeah.
And I referred to that lady that I'd spoken to in Boulder. She talked about her master's athletes. And one of the things she said, two of the things she said was, one, don't be afraid to do the high intensity work. I have my guys doing 120, 130, 140% of FTP on the bike, but they might need longer to recover. So you need to, in order to keep the quality up, if the normal prescription is you do a minute on and a minute off, then take 2 minutes off, but do it. It's going to be better than doing all of that easy stuff that you've just talked about. So let's go on to psychology then. Mark, you had some good points to make at the beginning. Did you want to say something, Steve, before we go?
Yeah, no, I was just going to, so before we depart, again, this is personal, I don't know where it comes from, just about racing. I've actually found I've raced less as I've aged. And I think that's, it comes down to why you're in it. And it's linked to the recovery as well, isn't it? Obviously, shorter races, or any race, takes time to recover. But I've just found I've not wanted to race as frequently as I used to. I used to be racing every other weekend, maybe a triathlon, 10, 15, 20 a year. Nowhere near that at the minute. Just because I found that I'm not motivated to. Mm-hmm. That's neither good nor bad. I think it's just people need to realise that might happen.
Yeah, I'm the same. Absolutely. I get more enjoyment out of the cycle trips I go on with my friends. I get more enjoyment out of the process of training and keep myself fit. Going back to what we're talking about, you know, the aging process, I have occasionally I had a reunion with some guys from college recently. You know, it's interesting to see where everybody's journeys have taken them in terms of their build. These were all guys that played rugby, how they look, how much hair they've got, how much weight they've put on or not put on, you know, how tired they look. And I've occasionally seen people I was at school with, and it's I like to play that little game of who's fared best with the aging process.
Can I just say on this, though, because I've played that game as well.
Yeah.
And do you not think that we all have a very biased opinion of how young we think we look? So you're looking around the room thinking, oh my God, these guys have aged. And actually, my wife will say, you've aged worse than them, haven't you?
Yeah, but okay. So here's the thing, Mark, and this brings us on to psychology.
On the outside.
this brings us on to that psychology thing quite nicely. At the beginning, I said that there are three ages. There's the chronological age, which you can't change. There's the physical age, which we've chatted about. And there's also the mental age. How old you really think you are and how old you act. Now, I still think I look pretty good for my age. Maybe everybody else is looking at me going, my God, he's aged a bit. But I just don't see it. I've I did have to pay a lot for that mirror, by the way. But, but yeah, so the psychological age, though, what's in your mindset? Do you have the mindset of somebody who says, well, I'm in my late 40s, my early 50s, perhaps I ought to be slowing down? You know, people keep saying to me, when am I going to retire? Maybe I need to listen to them. Maybe I should just sort of, you know, the whole metaphorically the pipe and slippers thing. Or do you still behave like a 25-year-old? Yes, we've got an adventure. Come on, I'm in for it. Let's go. I'm willing to try it.
Well, I think there's a mix in the sense, you know, in that I still want to do new stuff and I'm still super keen to race and I'm always looking for things to do. I'm not a sit down and put my slippers on kind of person at all. I'm always looking for new projects at work. I'm always looking for new things to do with racing, always new ways to improve my training. That said, I don't run around like a headless chicken and I'm much more calm the way I think about things. And I think that's something that perhaps comes with age. You know, I don't know whether, like Steve said, as you get a bit older, you're maybe, when I was younger, you wanted to race all the time. We were doing midweek races and races at the weekends. You're very hungry to race and compete. I'm probably less so now, I'm a bit more calm about it. But that isn't to say I've lost my motivation in any way. I think you're motivated, but it's just different. And in a lot of ways, you know, better. I think just experience gives you a lot of that stuff. I think mentally, we you know, going on to the psychology side, and we're going to bring up there. But I think as you get older as well, that potentially, not in every case, older people may be a bit more mentally resilient. So, you know, if I'm racing in an Ironman and you get in a marathon and you're in a really tough place in the marathon, there is, you know, a part of my brain which is saying, we've done this before, we're here again. You know, I've done this multiple times. You've entered again, haven't you, you stupid fool? But, you know, and so I never lose my head, and very rarely will I stop and walk in an Ironman marathon or have really bad spells because I've done it so many times. And the psychologists would call it familiarization, wouldn't they? You know what to expect. You've rehearsed it before so many times and you know how to deal with it. You've got coping strategies to deal with it that you've practiced so many times. And I think perhaps if you're new to the sport, whatever age, I guess, but if you're relatively new to the sport, you don't have those coping mechanisms as much. You haven't had the same experiences. So yeah, I think there's a lot of benefits as you get older on that side of it.
Yeah, I think so. You know, like I would agree, you certainly get more resilient mentally. And you know, it comes down to you know, racing less as well. I think I would agree that you can be more resilient. You've got more experience, like you say. You very rarely make bad mistakes in terms of you know, strategy, tactics, whatever in a long race, for example. I do find though that you know, like Simon just said, you know, when you're younger, you're sort of ready to go. You're looking to push yourself all the time. You said, might you doing races here, races there. I find that, yes, you can, or personally, I have those moments where I can really push myself and I am really motivated as much as I ever have been, but they are rarer. That, you know, it's less often that can happen. So I race less. And, you know, it to push yourself in training happens less, A, because you need physically more recovery, and B, because the motivation doesn't come along as easy as it used to. You know, yeah. So I would regularly train with other people. I know I've just mentioned this. I would regularly train with other people to get that push, and I've done less and less of that. But I now know that's what I need. That's if I need a hard session and I'm up for it mentally, then that's how I'm going to get it.
Mark, you mentioned something in our pre-call chat about appreciation. I wonder as well, when I'm racing now, I appreciate the opportunity to race. I appreciate that the fact that my body still allows me to do the training and turn up in relatively good shape and that I can do it. And so the importance of me, you know, going sub 12 or sub 11 or beating this or setting a PB is less than the journey to get there and the people I've trained with, you know, those groups that you talked about, the sort of doing that stuff. And choosing to go to a place where I can enjoy the race, but I can enjoy everything about it. I can enjoy, you know, the reason we went back to Penticton, Steve, so many times was because it was a great place to go and spend a few days afterwards. That the whole thing leading up to the race, the spectators, the people in the town, just made it a place that gave you lots of memories beyond just suffering for 12 hours. And I think I probably appreciated that more and appreciate the journey more now than I did then. And also, you know, when you get to 56, you know, I was supposed to be doing Canada in a couple of months. I'm going to defer and do it next year. But there's also that thing about how many more of these have I got left in me? So this might be the last one. So I better bloody well appreciate it because, you know, I might not be doing another one again.
Well, that's always, that's the train at the coming down the tunnel at you, isn't it? You say, while you can, you've got to make the most of it.
Mark. Yeah. I mean, I say we were talking about this before we came on, weren't we? But I do think as I got older now, I do want to appreciate those things a lot more. Now, when I was younger, in my 20s and 30s, I was racing all the time and I raced all over the world and went everywhere. And I don't think it's that I was being dismissive. So I don't look back and think, I was just dismissive then of all the races that I did and I didn't appreciate them. I did appreciate them, but I wasn't in a position where I was thinking, how much longer am I going to be able to do this for? And I think just as you get older, you start to realize I've been racing for 30 years now, it won't go on forever. So you make the most of races a lot more. So I do appreciate them a lot more. And I think I remember 2 years ago, so I didn't race last year because I had this serious injury. And I remember a couple of years ago, I was going to Wales. And I'm not going to events just to enjoy them and enjoy the experience. I'm still trying to be competitive. And I'm still trying to win my age group when I go and compete. So I'm still very competitive in my age group. But I remember I went through a year of being really anxious on the start line and being really, really nervous. And I just had to have a word with myself and just saying, what is the point now? You know, if you're 30 years on, and you're still turning up and thinking, oh God, I'm really scared and I don't want to be here and it was ruining my morning. And you think, this is just, if you can't enjoy it, just what is the point? Mm. You know, if you can't enjoy it, what is the point in doing it? And I had to have a really serious word with myself that year because I almost packed in. And then I just, you know, adjusted my mindset. But the last few Ironman races I've done, I've got like my race number. And you know that you can get it framed and you put your number and your medal and some pictures and stuff like that and you put them up on the wall. And I think I've thrown most of my medals. From my 20s and 30s, I haven't got anything. I've binned them all.
Yeah.
How do I think? Jeez, you know, why don't you save those pictures? Because you'll really want them when you get older.
You will.
And now I am saving those pictures. And whether it's just to show the girls, you know, or whatever it is, I'm saving those pictures. And I've started thinking about those things now. And I say, I don't think it's that I was dismissive then. I just don't think you're in a position to appreciate it as much when you're younger. So...
Let's move on from the training and psychology then, because I'm conscious of the time here, guys. What other things do we need to be more conscious of when we get older? We've talked about more recovery. Sleep. Do you guys sleep more or less now than you used to?
I would say probably less, but I certainly don't need less.
Right.
They say you sleep less when you get older, don't you? But you don't feel like it.
No, that's just because you're more tired when you get up, Steve, because you're old.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you what are you doing sleep wise, Mark? I personally just before we go on, I'm more mindful about sleep now. I'm more conscious about it, whereas when I was younger, I'd just sort of, you know, I won't have a drink before I go to bed now. I'll have it earlier in the evening. Whereas before, I'd have 3 or 4 pints and then they'd just roll into bed.
I think I am more mindful of it now, and I'll try and sleep a bit more. And that's always not always the case, because I can have cycles where I can have a week of really bad sleep, really broken, and it absolutely wrecks me. Mm. And then I can sleep really well. And to be honest, what's quite interesting about sleep is that I think you were one of the first people, Simon, who started posting this thing about you need 8 hours. You know, and that's what... quite a few years ago, you started putting this stuff on Facebook, didn't you? You got to have your 8 hours sleep. And I hadn't really considered it until then as much. And then this 8 hour thing is now rings in my brain. And sometimes I'm going to bed and looking at the clock and thinking, oh, it's 11 o'clock already. And I've got to be up by 7. So if I don't fall asleep now, I'm not going to get my 8 hours. And I used to sleep well. And now I don't sleep that well because I'm stressed because I might not get my 8 hours. So it just ruined it for me. Trying to get 8 hours sleep now stresses me out.
I started doing a lot of stuff with sleep. I did some stuff with Nick Little-Hales. He was one of my first podcast guests, and he's written a book on sleep, and I've done a couple of presentations with him. And I bought a sleep app. One of the problems with it is that you start worrying about your sleep, and it actually tracking your sleep seemed to make things worse for a time, that you were thinking, looking at it and going, well, I thought I had a good night's sleep, but this doesn't say so. And then another night you'd think you'd been tossing and turning all night, and it says, no, you've slept really well. Now, how can that be? You rubbish you. So I've stopped wearing it now for a time being. Well, what about nutrition then? I mean, it's generally accepted. We've touched on the idea that, on the fact that it's well accepted we lose lean muscle mass as we get older. That means our metabolism, muscle burns fat. Muscle burns calories. So, the more muscle you have, the more calories you're going to burn. So if you've got less muscle, surely you need to eat less food. But if you keep eating food, then you end up with, middle-aged spread. And you can see even that endurance athletes are sort of, become a bit podgy. But do you think that there's a need to be a little more conscious about what we're putting in our mouths as we get older?
Yeah, I think, it definitely becomes, I'm not sure if you put weight on any more readily, but I would certainly say it's harder to lose it once it's on. So, I think people need to be mindful of that. The simpler, the amount of food is probably less. There's a case for saying that we become more efficient, so we need less anyway. And, and as we were discussing earlier, Simon, that your sensitivity to carbs might not become an issue, but The only thing that's going to happen is it will become an issue.
Yeah, it's going to deteriorate. You're going to get less sensitive, aren't you?
If it's good now, it might get worse. If it's bad now, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
I used to eat whatever I wanted to be honest, when I was younger. I had a good diet, just used to smash in it. Just training really hard, so I just ate whatever I wanted to. And just as I've got older, I very easily put weight on now compared to when I was younger. So I've just got to watch it and be more strict with it, which irritates me. But then at the same time, I'm trying not to become obsessed with it. I always wonder with triathletes, they talk about eating disorders. And I think if you imagine an eating disorder as a spectrum from someone who has a full-blown eating disorder to someone who will just eat whatever they want to eat and it doesn't affect them. I think 90% of triathletes are somewhere on that spectrum, but probably not far along the spectrum for someone to say, have you got an eating disorder?
No.
Because I think, I wonder how many triathletes, when they put something in their mouth that's like ice cream or something, every now and again, just they feel guilty like they shouldn't be eating it. And I've got to be careful because I have suffered with that in the past, where I've become so obsessed that I can't enjoy any nice food. This was like 10, 15 years ago, not as much now. But I think you've got to be a little bit careful with that as well. You can become overly obsessed with it. And ultimately, if you want to be in a happy place, then you should at least be able to sometimes eat or have a drink or whatever you want to eat, take and feel comfortable doing that and not feel bad about it.
And also realize that it's not going to affect anything that you do.
Yeah, yeah.
I did a nutrition coaching course a couple of years ago, which is it's not the same as being a nutritionist. It's more sort of looking at obstacles and behaviors and patterns that sort of prevent people achieving what they want to achieve through the nutrition. But there was some sort of biology and chemistry and all that other stuff in the lead up to it. And one of the things I understood from that and that I've observed is that as endurance athletes, we tend to go on our bike rides and think, well, I've ridden 40 miles and I've got another 40 miles to go, so I deserve that cake. I deserve that frappa latte mocha latticino thing with multiple marshmallows and sprinkles, and I can get away with it. And yes, you probably can in terms of looking at the outside and thinking, well, I'm lean. I don't have a weight problem. But what I've understood is going back to this thing we were talking about before, Steve, about insulin, about what's happening to your blood sugar when you consume hundreds of calories of pretty much pure sugar if you're having a caramel brownie or something. And that's what you're talking about, becoming less sensitive as we get older. And I do wonder if, you know, with the wanton consumption of sports drinks and nutrition that you seem to see from a lot of people, whether there's a diabetes epidemic coming in endurance athletes. It'll be a shock to a lot of people, but I have heard of a number of athletes who have been identified as pre-diabetic.
And type 2 diabetes wasn't really a thing when I was younger. I don't even remember it. No. And then it was just when we went low fat. To lose weight, you've got to go low fat. Everything was fat. I can remember probably my 20s. You couldn't go into a shop and buy anything that was high in fat. Everything was fat-free, low fat, 99% less fat.
Yeah, high in and sugar.
Then it increased it with sugar. And then, of course, type 2 diabetes became a thing, didn't it?
Yeah. So I think there's probably more attention to what you put in. That doesn't mean you shouldn't enjoy yourself, but I think that whole moderation type thing is definitely worthwhile. And I agree with you, Mark, about the eating disorders. I mean, there've been some well-publicized triathletes, male and female, have had that. And it's endurance sports are perfect for people who have eating disorders to hide, because they can always justify not having that food or, you know, restricting this because, well, I need to be, you know, in peak performance. So and most people would buy that. So it's almost like hiding in plain sight, if you like. It's a difficult one as coaches to discuss and can be quite controversial. So we probably should move on from that subject before we, as old men, say something to somebody we're upset without really.
The other sort of thing to consider in that area, and this is I don't know if you've had a podcast on it already, but is the menopause?
Yes.
I mean, that's a topic on its own, I think. But obviously, for aging females, that's something that needs to be taken in consideration.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, in the absence of getting her onto the show, I've invited Stacey Sims on two or three times and just not been able to pin her down for that yet. But definitely... the book she's written, Raw, is probably far more informative than anything you guys or I could say about that subject right here. It's all of the females that I know that have read that are either approaching or in or been through the menopause have read it and said it's been revolutionary. So that will be my first port of call. And then if we can get her on a show, we will do a podcast.
Oh, all right. I haven't read it, but I'll look it up.
Yeah, definitely. And as a coach and as coaches as well, I would say that... most coaches are seriously ill-informed and under-informed about these female hormonal issues. It's definitely a good book. So for you guys and for anybody listening, I'd highly recommend it. Let's talk about a couple of other things. I've got a note here. Mark, you mentioned this before about excuses and, almost accepting that getting slow is an inevitability. I wonder at what point we stop having goals to get fitter. We stop beating ourselves up if we can't improve our swim speed or we can't nudge our FTP up, and we accept that as everybody loses it, we've just got to get slower than everybody else. And when the goal becomes, if I'm 56 and I can be as fit next year and do the performances next year that I can do this year, actually that's probably like improving in my 30s.
We always say this, this is an obvious switch, isn't it, where you go from a point in your life where you're constantly trying to get faster to suddenly you refocus on not getting any slower. And that's in the 40s, 50s, get to that point of, I'm not going to be able to run any quicker now, so how do I minimise my losses? And I think that's a change in focus for me. So how do I minimise my losses? I get older now and I'm at the top of that peak and I'm just stuck coming down the other side now. So how do I minimise my losses and maintain what I've got? And I think, going back to what we said earlier, there are some very clear weaknesses that most people tend to have if they've been competing in endurance sports for many years, so they've been running marathons for many years, and it is those strength and that power and that speed. And it's how you can change your training and focus on those things. Because, I've coached people who've done like 50 Ironman races or something and raced for 30 years and they're still worried that they've got to get in another long ride. I'm like, you can ride till the cows come home.
You know, yeah. Your problem is you're just not fast enough.
Yeah.
You've got to look at this and say, you know, this is very, very simple, that most people who are getting older in Ironman, they don't have any problem finishing an Ironman. They just can't do the time they want to do. So going out and doing another plod for 3 hours is just, it's probably not going to get you anywhere. And there has to be a change in training focus to understand that, you know, you've got to work on those weaknesses, which are that strength, that power, that speed, and those things will improve your time. But again, that mindset of, but I'm going long, so surely I don't need that. When I'm going long, it's all about endurance. And that all feeds into this thing where, you know, they don't need to go and do the sessions, which they really need to do.
Mark, I mean, you do a lot of strength training, Mark.
When the gyms are open.
I'd imagine you're set up at home. But the number of people that we've all seen, not just older athletes, but younger ones as well, but certainly, you know, there's no problem with the engine. The cardio, they're never out of breath coming to the end of an Ironman or half Ironman, are they? But they're slowing down because they can't stand up straight. The back's gone. They're leaning forward. They can't pick the feet up because the calf muscles have stopped working. You know, the hips are tight. None of that is related to going out and doing another long ride or a run, is it? That's all related to working, doing the gym. And if there's one thing I would say about, you know, my own experiences of getting older, it's you've definitely got to pay more attention to the bodywork and not the engine. Like an old car, having an engine that doesn't belch out oil and you know, cough and splutter is one thing. But if the bodywork's rusty and the suspension's creaking, then that perfect engine ain't going to go help you go very fast.
Yeah, even if the engine's running, you're knackered if your chassis collapses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the reality of it. And I think, you know, I don't think I needed to do any of that stuff when I was younger, but now is a definite shift. And I think it's also, again, a shift in, I mean, I just put everything down. I can link everything to psychology, but here's another mindset shift, which is, and you will recognize this one, Simon, you've probably had this conversation millions of times with people, is that if you said to them, right, there's your training for the week. You've got 2 swim, 2 bike, 2 run, 2 strength, fit them into your week. You know that they would prioritize the 2 swim, the 2 bike, the 2 run. And then if they had time, they would try and fit in the 2 strength because people don't see it as a priority session. So when I switched and started doing strength work, what I had to do in my mind is, right, if I have to dodge a session this week because I'm a bit busy at work or I'm tired or whatever, I don't miss the strength workouts. Yeah. My strength workouts, it can be like an hour and a half in the gym, but they are the key workouts. So don't start doing an extra swim to drop a strength. They have to be part of the week. And I think for endurance athletes, that's a really difficult switch of mindset that this isn't some supplementary thing which you add on. And if you haven't got time, you don't do it. This is now a key workout for you, which has to be done. They can't get the correlation between that and improving performance in bike and run. They just can't see it. So I think that's a really important mindset that they've got to adopt.
Steve?
Yeah, no, I agree completely. You know, I think, always trying to educate as they get older, it's important for everybody, S&C or mobility, but it becomes increasingly important as you age. You know, as Mark said, you know, if you're dealing with an experienced athlete, you know, it's any who's training for any distance triathlon, you know, they've been training 25, 30, 35 years. The endurance isn't the problem. No. You know, I've got athletes I've been coaching. They've done 20, 25, 30 Ironmen since I've been coaching them. And they're always like, you know, as much, they're always worried about, oh, you know, I'd rather get a long bike in. Now get in the gym or do some yoga or something that, at the stage they're at now, or the stage you're at now, that is your key workout. And they've all got issues. They all know, you know, they don't get to 50 plus with 30 years of training and not have some biomechanical problems, some long-term injury that just needs constant, you know, or if they do, they're amazingly blessed. But we all have stuff that, you know, like you say, with injuries or with injury avoidance or with mechanics or, you know, accidents that have happened. You know, one of my athletes had a huge accident a few years ago, which has given her loads and loads of problems to deal with. That she does amazingly. I mean, she's a superb athlete, but she's constantly managing the results of this car iter, basically. She's constantly managing that, so she knows that she's in the gym 2, 3, 4 times a week. Otherwise, she goes backwards. And it's nothing to do with cardiovascular fitness. It's nothing to do with swim, bike, or run. It's to do with, you know, holding a body together. You mentioned about when you see the 70 plus, 80 even age group athletes, and it's a case of, I've just got to outlive people. Well, they're not doing it because they're cardiovascularly really fit guys and women. They're doing it because they've looked after the equipment they've got. You know, they've looked after the body they've got. It is strength and conditioning. It is mobility. Whatever form that takes, there's loads of ways of doing it. You can be in the gym. You can do Pilates. You can do yoga. I'm not bothered, to be honest. If somebody says, I do yoga, I don't want to go in the gym, well, fine, you know, knock yourself out. If it works for them and it's something, you know, I think it was you said to me something in a course years and years ago, Simon, about if you could do one session a week, what would it be? It would be S&C, because that is helping you in your everyday life. Mm-hmm. It's helping you, you know, do the gardening, it's helping you. If you do a manual job, it's helping you that. It's helping you play with your kids, your grandkids, whatever it is. You know, a session of swimming ain't going to help you do that. It's not going to help in any day, everyday life. But a session of S&C where you're improving or maintaining mobility or you're working on weaknesses, that is going to help you in everyday life.
I think that's a good point you've made there, Steve, is that we're talking about working with people as triathletes. We're talking about ourselves as endurance athletes. But before that, we're all human beings, aren't we? We've all got to be healthy human beings. If you're not a healthy human being, there's no way you're going to get your best performance as a human being or in any sport. And that whole thing that you mentioned was brought abruptly into my mind when I observed my mum getting older. You know, so you probably noticed this with your parents and grandparents. She couldn't get the top off a jam jar. She couldn't unscrew it because she didn't have the strength in her wrist. She nearly dropped a box on her head one day because she was trying to lift it into the top cupboard and it was just a bit too heavy and she didn't have the strength in the shoulders. And my brother was just walking past and he managed to stabilize it and help her. My grandma couldn't get up out of a low seat that we had. So she had to have one of those Shackleton chairs that enabled her to get up because she just didn't have the hip strength. And then another elderly person that I knew couldn't get out of the bath, so because it was just too low, they didn't have the strength to lift themselves up. Those are functional bits of strength, nothing to do with athletic performance. So, you know, going back to what you said, Steve, you've got, you know, there's a whole load of things that we need to do in our everyday life that which strength and conditioning will help us to be able to do properly for longer. Yep. So,
I was going to say, those jam jars are quite tricky, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I do have to sometimes get my wife to loosen it before I can get the lid off. But then maybe that's going to stop me getting diabetes. I can't open the jam. That's got to be a good thing. But just one example I would say is that a few years ago, I remember when I've dabbled with strength and conditioning training for quite a lot, you know, for quite a long time. But then I had a phase off it and I got back 3 years ago because I remember specifically I got to a point where I won my age group at Ironman UK, but I had to be careful every time I picked up my little daughter in case I put my back out or pulled my hamstring. And I just thought, you're okay at performing in an Ironman, but you are not healthy. You know. No. And it was really, I had to be very careful. I didn't put my back out every time I picked up my, you know, 2-year-old daughter. And I just thought, this is ridiculous.
Okay, boys. We've gone on long enough on this subject. I think everybody's got the picture now. So let's finish on a positive note. I asked you for some do's and don'ts. Steve quite rightly said that he didn't think that we should. He thought we should do, not do, don't. So let's finish on a positive note. I think we're all agreed that one thing we should encourage older athletes and human beings to do is do more strength training. So we're going to go around one at a time. And what else would you be saying we should do more of?
More of?
Ooh, yeah.
Oof, blimey. I'm going to come to the sleep thing.
Okay. Yeah. Do more sleep. Yeah. Mark?
I think you've got to do the things that you keep avoiding as you get older. So don't avoid those things that you need to do. Assess your strengths and weaknesses. You probably already know what they are. Go and work on those weaknesses and stop swerving them.
Okay. Do more mobility for me. So it's strength is one thing, but mobility, the ability to, you know, again, bend over to tie your shoelaces up, to reach behind your neck, to undo your wetsuit, to look over your shoulder comfortably when you're riding your bike so you can see what's coming, you know, all of those things that we take for granted when we're younger. And then just it definitely helps with the injury prevention. So do more mobility. Back to you, Steve-O.
I'll come back to the one I said about the running volume earlier, that at least consider making each run longer, but running less if you need more recovery. You know, running breaks us down, whatever happens, or however long it is. So if you are getting run niggles, consider that. You know, you can get the same volume in by running slightly longer, but maybe missing out a session a week if you need the recovery.
Mark?
I was going to pick a psychology one and say, don't just use age as an excuse and say that because I'm getting older, that's why I've got slower. There are ways of maintaining your speed, even improving and getting faster, even as you get older. You've just got to look for the ways to do it.
Okay, well, on that one then, I'll say, do continue with high intensity training. Adapt the volume that you do. Maybe don't do them as frequently during your week. You know, stretch them out. Have and maybe take longer recoveries in between reps. But do keep up with the HIT. And as we've talked about, pretty easy to do that with swim and bike. Maybe not so much on the running, but also as we talked about, there's ways of adapting. It's not maybe about moving fast. You can do stairs. They don't stress your Achilles as much, and if you can find somewhere where there's lots of them, you can certainly get a pretty good cardiovascular workout there. Mm-hmm. Anything else to add, Steve?
I'll just say, you know, generally pick your battles.
Yep, pick your battles, like that one. Mark?
The last one I would say is pick your training partners. Train with, you know, get out of your rut that you've been in for years. Do different stuff. Find a new group, and ideally people who are faster than you. And quite often that's younger than you. So I have a group that I train with, and they're all younger than me, and they think I'm coaching them, but I've manipulated it. So they're motivating me.
there's another thing there as well, Mark. I think probably this coronavirus thing, when we've all been in lockdown, has shown us that community and community spirit and the social aspect of training is really important. Mm. And when you're hanging around with younger people, it definitely makes you feel a bit younger, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know what the hell they're talking about when they're on about some of these pop stars of these days, or the music, or TikTok. But
I don't know who's in the hip parade these days. I don't know who's in the hip parade.
I'd have one last thing there about mindfulness. Be just, you know, enjoy your food, enjoy having a drink, but just be mindful about what you put in your gob.
Yeah, yeah. As Steve left.
His battery's gone. I don't know whether that's on his phone or whether his own personal battery's worn out. But so we'll say goodnight to Steve. That was Steve Lumley. Steve had to leave early, so thanks, Steve. I think we've probably just about done this one to death, Mark. So thanks for joining us again. So, from Steve Lumley, Mark Lathwaite and Simon Ward, the grumpy old coaches, thanks again, guys. It's been great, and let's resume soon with another subject.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high-performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.